Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, 10-20, 2015. We're already halfway through the month of October on our way to November, where it's going to start raining in California, we think, although it has been raining in Southern California.
Is it, are you getting flooding because it's so dry?
No, not up here. Well, we will.
But not yet.
We will, yeah, we will. Everyone's going to get flooded. But it doesn't really, that's only a short-term phenomenon.
Well, there's a flood of news going on.
Hey-o.
I don't know even where to begin. You know, markets are still on a upbeat tact, regardless of the news. And there's a lot of interesting earnings news, economic news. We saw that China's GDP came in at 6.9%. Estimates were for 6.8. So everybody was like, ah, that's so good. Meanwhile,
that's amazing.
Yeah, wow. But that's really not so good. The fact is that if you look at the internal numbers, while internal consumption and domestic spending was higher, retail sales look a little bit better there, fact still remains that they're pretty soft in every other department. And the 6.9 was under the 7, even though it beat the estimate. It was under the 7. That was the number that everybody was like, oh my God, I hope that China doesn't get below 7. And so they're there now. So what's happening is everybody's thinking stimulus. More stimulus. It's worked so well over the last 2 years. More stimulus.
Yeah, it could be. It could happen.
Mm-hmm. And the same thing's happening here.
It works so well, it hasn't worked at all.
I know. It did work. Listen, it worked when there was a requirement for liquidity. There was no sentiment that would look to stocks and people were freaking out. Interest rates had to be brought down for, you know, to revitalize all the economies. But after a while, the problem is that the effectiveness of these tools that they have, very blunt instruments, runs out. Even with China putting in billions, hundreds of billions of dollars into their own stock market, like directly, it still fell 40% in the last 6 months.
Sounds like a bad investment.
Yeah, really bad. So let's talk about some of the things that are going on. I don't know if you noticed the news of Weight Watchers. Did you see this?
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Isn't that great? I think it's, first of all, brilliant.
You don't think it was market rigging?
Well, I don't care what you call it. I thought it was brilliant.
Definitely a winner. So would have been a nice one to know about in advance.
Oh, no kidding. Stock was suffering terribly. This is Weight Watchers. Oprah Winfrey comes out with an announcement that she's buying a 10% stake in the company. Stock's up, I don't know, 3, 4, 5%, 10% pre-market. By the end of the day yesterday, on Monday, stock is up 100%.
Yeah.
And I think this makes a lot of sense because, first of all, if you know anything about Oprah, she has quite a large variation in her weight over time. Like up and down, up and
down.
Yeah,
right? She'll go in and she'll lose weight on this, you know, on the system, and that'll help things. But it's really more the... It's really more the Midas touch Oprah has.
It's also she has I don't even know the number, but these dedicated followers, fans. That if Oprah, I mean, I don't know if you've ever met somebody that is a real Oprah fan.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Oprah says this.
She saved my life. She saved my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever met her? No. No, but she saved my life. This is the human embodiment mm-hmm. of Apple. Where you have these fanatics that just whatever Apple Watch is the greatest. Whatever the company does, and mm-hmm. this is a great way to sell stuff. There's no doubt about it. People are on board. And the same thing with Oprah. It's just a different version.
Yeah, I don't know if she has her Book of the Month Club anymore or whatever that was. Remember how popular that was?
Oh, she was making, if you got on that thing, you were a bestseller.
Right, exactly. Next day. Exactly.
Famous.
Yep. It was kind of the, it was Shark Tank of its day in terms of bringing things out, introducing it. And there was a couple of several good books, although There was also a lot of scams. Remember the book A Million Little Pieces, I think it was called? James somebody, who wrote this book about, you know, his trials and tribulations and this very engaging, I read it, engaging, entertaining. It was all false.
The whole that's fiction.
Yeah. It wasn't billed as that, but anyway. So here's what I thought was so brilliant about it. So Oprah will get 10% or bought 10% of this company and Weight Watchers, of course. And the timing was great. If you think about the timing of this, we're in the going to the fourth quarter into the time where everybody does the New Year's diet, right? When this is the time of year coming in January 1st through the 30th that the parking lots at the gyms are packed. And then they just whittle down throughout the rest of the year. People are on diets. Oh, I'm going to, you know, find my New Year's resolution is to go on. I mean, that's the biggest one, right? I'm going to go on a diet. So she goes in and she buys 10% of this company. Obviously, the company gets a major boost. As a matter of fact, if you take yesterday's move and today's move, the stock is up 200% in 2 days. I was thinking, what else could be something that will follow along here? And I started thinking, you know, what would be really cool of Oprah is to kind of start this whole weight loss, healthy living, this whole encompassing all these different parameters and tell her people, you know what, you need to get a Fitbit because if you have a Fitbit, we have a place on the Oprah website or whatever you call it that will actually track all of our, you know, the people that are following us and you go to Weight Watchers and all that. And we're going to lose 10 million pounds or whatever it is in a year. We're going to walk 42,000 miles a day. We're going to, you know, get 8 hours of sleep a night. And the Fitbit can actually calculate this, put this on the web, and maybe some way they figure out the technology behind this and have it all amassed for the Oprah, the big Oprah diet and health movement. What do you think about that?
Well, I would think it's more likely that Apple would be in on a deal like that.
Maybe already Fitbit is selling their various, the scale, the Fitbit little band and all that on the Weight Watcher site already. Which, by the way, Oprah is on.
Oh, okay. She's well, then on that the makes side. Sense.
Yeah, she's on. This is not happening yet, by the way, what I'm talking about. We were short Fitbit for the last, few weeks. I closed that position today when it was up a few percent, but it looks like it's starting to get a bit of a underswell and a movement here on no news of any significance, other than the fact that a lot of corporations are starting to buy into this whole thing, and Big Brother will be watching you from now on, it seems. This is a classic Big Brother. The whole Fitbit craze.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know? So, anyway, just a thought there on that.
Like it.
Yep. Now, on the other side, talking about eating not so healthy, or maybe somewhat healthy, and this goes right into what you've been saying all along, Chipotle, the earnings come out not so good, missed on EPS. Kind of blaming it on the, now what do they call it? Carnitas. Now, I don't know why every analyst calls it carnitas. Why can't they call it pork?
Because it's carnitas.
What's the difference?
Well, carnitas is pork cooked a certain very specific way.
They don't buy it that way. They buy pork.
Yes, they do. They buy pork.
I mean, they buy pork. So it hasn't been on
the
menu.
They don't buy carnitas.
Right. You can't. Oh, look at that cute little carnita go over there. You know, it's not like that. I'm going out carnita hunting. So the earnings came in light. There was some blame on the carnitas, which was off menu for a while, but about 90% of the restaurants now have the carnitas back on the menu.
I can't imagine anything on that menu that would taste decent, except maybe in a million years carnitas.
Yeah, that's okay. I've had it. It's all right. So stock initially got hammered. I mean, just came down really hard. But we've seen this before. We've seen that when Chipotle's numbers come out and they look at the outlook of same-store sales moving out into the future in the low single digits and store traffic down, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But then somehow it levitates higher. And then if it doesn't do it on the earnings, the next day it moves. Well, today the earnings came out. Stock came down a good 8, 9%. Then it started moving back higher to where it was. It moved up 50 points from the drop. And then all of a sudden, the earnings conference call started, and that's where things got ugly. Stock closed down below its support, down about 9.5%, which is, I guess, about 55 points.
What was the conference call? What was wrong with it?
It was about their outlook and their concern about lower traffic and lower earnings. Traffic has been very light, and they're going to be opening up 50 or 60 stores. They're opening up a lot of stores. They have almost, I think...
They have light traffic. Why are they opening more stores?
That's the big question. You know, to bring in more revenue, maybe. But there's a lot of discussion about with like the old Starbucks deal where they had the... Remember how Starbucks... Well, we still do, but they really had, like in New York, Starbucks on one side of the street and a Starbucks on the other side of the street? And you're like, what's
yes,
that?
Yes, they have... Vancouver had a situation like that.
Right. Like, what? How does that work, right? How is that beneficial? So
well, they don't have to walk a half a block across the street to get to the Starbucks. Okay. I don't know.
Well, there's some conversation about each of these stores now cannibalizing on the others. They have like 2,000 stores or more than that. So.
Well, here in the Bay Area,
mm-hmm.
there's a Chipotle, one of the early ones, I think, when they just began. In fact, they went through the owning being owned by McDonald's and then out. That is on San Pablo Avenue near Gilman. And then if you go into the next little town, you get still San Pablo Avenue, and now it's across from El Cerrito Plaza. There's another Chipotle. For there, it's not a convenient thing, but you could walk from one to the other.
Right. So maybe there's the reality that there's, you know, getting into a point of Chipotle having... you know, reach the pinnacle of where they're going to be because adding more stores isn't going to add that much more overall revenue and earnings. So I think that's what's happening right now.
Now, are these franchises or are these all company-owned outlets?
I think they're all company-owned.
Well, okay.
Now, we had Yahoo earnings come out. Misses on both the top and the bottom lines. Metrics didn't look too bad from what I saw, but they weren't really thrilling. Their outlook was not great. Mobile was getting stronger. But clearly their outlook was the biggest concern in terms of what they expected. Now, they did some weird thing where you need to explain this to me. They switched from Bing to Google search in terms of some of the, I guess, paid search engine. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, well, I know that they switched away. They used to be Google before they switched to Bing.
Now they're
so
going
they
back
were
to Google
before, and then they went to Bing. First of all, they had their own search engine. Yeah,
that's what I don't understand. That's
they had
the
their
part
own searches. But instead of developing it further, they either sold it off. I don't know where it ended up. But they decided it was cheaper just to use Google, and then something happened, and they had a falling out with Google. And so they said, screw you, Google. We're going to Bing. And Microsoft, I guess, maybe cut them a better deal, too. And I suppose maybe they jacked up the rate. I have no idea what happened to get them to go back.
Yeah,
who knows?
Yep, they went back. I thought it was really interesting because, if I'm not mistaken, Yahoo search was here before Google search, right?
Well, Yahoo had a search directory. It wasn't a crawler the way AltaVista was. It was a different kind of an approach to search.
Mm-hmm.
And it was working fine. And then Google came along and everyone said, oh, this is the way to go because they could do this thing with the ads, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what Yahoo lost its way years ago.
The big question is whether or not this is going to be the death knell for Melissa Myers.
Well, she's hanging in there.
Yeah, she's hanging in there, but nothing good has happened since she's been there. It's just more of the same. And in fact, they got rid of a chunk of their money losing properties. Right, they kind of like compressed a lot of the things and consolidated, and it's still just a okay engine. And just for the record, I hate the word Bing.
They what you hate what?
Bing, the word the name Bing.
Bing.
It just
yes, it's not appealing.
No. So.
Well, I don't know what to say.
And then the bigger problem you have also is that next week we're going to know a little bit more about... If you look at Yahoo, it's really been tracking Alibaba. And we still have the big unknown right now of whether or not the spinoff of Alibaba from Yahoo in that transaction is going to be a tax-free deal. And if it's not a tax-free deal, it's going to be pretty ugly for Yahoo.
I don't see how it can be a tax-free deal.
Mm. I don't think so either. And that's the hints that we're getting But Yahoo keeps on fighting it, saying, nope, we think it's going to be okay. We're spinning it off.
We'll see.
Big week for earnings. We also have Microsoft, Google, Caterpillar, and just hundreds of other earnings coming throughout the rest of this week.
Great.
So far, 54% of companies are beating lowered estimates. What I mean by that is that if we look, let's say, 6 months ago, estimates for the company for this quarter were whatever it is. And you look about 3 months ago and 2 months ago, they've kept on coming down. Estimates kept on coming down. So companies are beating, many of the companies, 54%, a slight majority, are beating lowered estimates. And even fewer on a percentage basis are beating revenue expectations, which compares to a normal, quote unquote, normal season. Then about 70% or so companies beat earnings estimates and about 55% beat revenues estimates. So
when are we going to realize that this is a giant scam?
What part of it? Oh, the beating earnings?
Yeah.
No, it's no question about it.
What do you think we're going to make, Bill? I think we're going to make 4 cents. Okay, let's tell them we're going to make 3.
Right.
Okay, that sounds good.
Or all the analysts, you know, essentially it's a poker game where one side of the table, the company, has the cards. The other side of the table, the analysts have their cards. The analysts are showing their cards to the companies the whole time, right? Saying, hey, this is what we have for, you know, can you beat this? And the companies then either do one of two, a couple of things. They guide lower, or they kind of massage the analysts into putting out the right number. Or these days, they just do a little bit more stock buybacks, right? To kind of boost it up a little bit.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Mm-hmm. A couple of interesting car-related news items. A follow-up on Volkswagen.
Yeah.
It seems that the device that was engineered, and you talked about this last episode or a couple episodes ago about how the whole point was there was this device, and this device was able to turn on and off dependent on whether or not it was detected that an emissions test was going on.
Right.
And when this emissions test was actually going on, the car would switch its system to a level of emissions that would pass the test, right?
Yeah.
So what's interesting is that further information is finding out that there was a variety of engine enhancements or changes through the years that required different engineering of this particular device to be able to be put on the system in order to fool the emissions. So it wasn't just one device that was kind of part of a bigger block that was just remanufactured. It had to be changed each time there was a new engine design.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. What you're saying is that these guys were doing this scheme at all kinds of different levels for a long time.
Yep. And again, it wasn't just a one-off. It was a clearly much deeper situation. I think that
I don't know how they expected to get away with it forever.
I know. I don't know if we mentioned this last week, but Germany put a mandatory recall of all these cars throughout Europe. Usually, you have a voluntary recall. You tell the company, okay, do a voluntary recall. And people that want to change this, you know, whatever. But I guess they were getting really sick and tired of the fact that there was no clarity on this from Volkswagen. And they said, you know what? Mandatory recall. And I think it's the second time in history there was a mandatory recall like this. Yeah. There's far fewer cars here. There's about 8 million in Europe. There's about, I think, 550,000 or so in the USA. So the stock is slowly but surely trickling down.
I would. I wonder about those little diesels that they had. They don't like half a million in this country. We're not big diesel buyers anyway. But that little diesel, I've driven these sorts of diesels, and they go like bats out of hell. They're astonishing. Mm-hmm. Really nice car, great engine. And I'm wondering if you because now I said they're going to be worthless. That's what everyone says.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's worthless. You won't be able to sell it or anything. What if you lived in Wyoming, where there's no car emissions testing whatsoever. And I bought one of these VW diesels, a little hot rod. I just drove it around Wyoming, and I could probably get a damn good deal on it.
Yeah. So if you are thinking about selling your car and you have one of these Volkswagen TDI diesels that have these problems, Craigslist Wyoming is probably the place that you want to put the ad.
Well, if you look on the list, you can go to Google and say states that have emissions testing or requirements. Testing is what you're looking for. And there's a lot of states, Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi, Wyoming. Some of the states, like, for example, Arizona and Washington State have, and Oregon, only have emissions testing in certain cities, but not statewide. So even in Washington State, I could have one of these up in Port Angeles or, you know, floating around anywhere, driving around one of these little bombers. And unless I lived in Seattle, I wouldn't have to worry about it.
I know. I hear you.
I mean, everyone's talking about, oh, so they're worthless. Well, if they're worthless, let's find a workaround.
Well, the workaround is going to be that there is a,
the workaround is living in Wyoming.
Okay. But for those people that don't live in Wyoming and bought these cars, and because these cars had a higher premium to other cars in its class due to the low emissions and the gas efficiency, the premium is pretty much evaporated. Now, whether or not this car is going to be worth nothing, I don't think that's the case. I mean, it's four wheels with an engine and it moves. It's worth something.
Yeah.
But I think the premium is the problem that was paid for this. The potential problem you have, and I think this is very big, and I mentioned this before, is the leasing companies that had put a certain value on the car when they would buy it back after the lease was over.
Right.
I think those things are a big problem.
Oh, yeah, they're screwed.
Yeah. Nobody's talking about that yet. Nobody.
We should start looking at leasing companies. There might be some good shorts in there.
Yeah, I mean, you get Volkswagen Credit is one of them. Definitely yeah. There, but we'll see. I don't know who else is out there, but we could, because I don't think it's, you know, I think it's a piece of, for example, let's say it's Chase. Let's just say they outsourced it to Chase Leasing, or they sold it off to Chase Leasing. It's a small part of the big picture. And if Chase can swallow an $8 billion currency trade that went awry.
Yeah, right.
You know, this is not going to
this is nothing.
It's not going to cause them too much of a problem.
And they'll just get the trucks ready and ship them to Wyoming.
Right, exactly. That'd be funny. Somebody arrives. We're going to go to Wyoming on a trip.
Oh, you go to Wyoming just to visit Yellowstone or something. You're driving around. Why are there so many Volkswagens in this state?
That's kind of funny. All right, let's see what else we got. We got more car stories. First of all, we did see that Ferrari, it priced its IPO. It's going to start trading tomorrow under the symbol RACE, R-A-C-E. And
I think it's a huge disappointment, I think, to everyone that Ferrari would go public.
It's kind of...
That means they can now be bought by Volkswagen, or they can be bought by Ford and then sold to the Indians, or they can... The company isn't going to lose its cachet. There's no... What's the last independent hot custom supercar that out there? McLaren, I think, is the only one that I can think of.
Maserati, McLaren...
Maserati's owned by...
Who, Ford?
But it used to be owned... They're owned by somebody.
What about Lamborghini?
Lamborghini is owned by Volkswagen, at least according to everyone talking to me.
Yeah,
and I think Maserati is owned by Volkswagen. I think Bugatti is owned by Volkswagen. Of course, they'll all go down the tubes at the same time if Volkswagen fails. But where are the independents? And this Ferrari is the last one, or one of the last ones. I'm sure there's some others.
Well, they're raising a lot of money. They're raising $950 million, values the company close to $10 billion. It's oversubscribed. And the interesting thing is that the pricing on this, if you do a pricing comparison to other automobile manufacturers, very, very rich in terms of P-E ratio. And maybe it can get some of that due to the fact the price of the cars and the current wait time and all that. But I don't think that's going to last forever. It's a car, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's like the value of Tesla.
Which we'll talk about next, because something interesting happened today with that. Did you see the report today?
Yeah, somebody finally started to discover something I've always said is needs to be observed is the reliability over time.
Right.
You can buy a car that's the, you know, J.D. Power's initial quality award. That means the thing is dynamite when you buy it because it's perfect. Everything's great. And then, you know, 6 months later, it's fallen apart. I don't even think, I think this is the tip of, personally. I mean, I have to say Tesla's a great car. But I still think that the tip of the iceberg, we're still dealing with the tip of the iceberg because this car is more or less glued together.
I think there's some staples.
I'm sorry?
I think there's also some staples.
There may be staples and there may be some minor number of welds, but it's using modern technology to be manufactured, which includes modern adhesives. And I don't care. I mean, I know enough about plastics and adhesives to know that they oxidize. Some oxidize more than others. Some of them hold up for a long time, maybe 10 years. Some of them, who knows? And it may depend on the ozone or the temperature that it's under. Maybe if it's a hot area like Arizona, the glues might lose their elasticity or they might just crack. I mean, I don't like a car that's glued together. Maybe I'm old-fashioned.
Yeah, and going along with what you've said, just to kind of put the story in perspective for our listeners, it seems that Consumer Reports surveyed 1,400 Model S owners who, quote, chronicled an array of detailed and complicated maladies with the drivetrain, power equipment, charging equipment, and giant iPad-like center console. They also complained about body and sunroof squeaks, rattles, and leaks. So that last little component there was what you're talking about.
Yeah.
As the older vehicles are getting up in miles, we are seeing some where the electric motor needs to be replaced, and the onboard charging system won't charge the battery. Now, what's really interesting about this is it came off the Consumer Reports top list of cars. But what I found really odd about this was about a month ago, didn't Consumer Reports rate them like 103? It broke all records for cars.
Yeah, they had the highest rating.
I don't understand how you go from a highest rating a month ago to now off the list.
Probably once they push, I think what happened from an editorial standpoint, it would seem to me, you gave it this ridiculously high rating, and then all these people that, a lot of people that have Teslas would be Consumer Reports subscribers, it seems to me. They had all these maladies, and then they probably flooded the editors with, hey, this is bull crap. We've had nothing but problems, or we've had this problem and that problem. These have never been addressed. And they got swamped with a bunch of mail. Then they had to go relook at it, and they said, okay, we keep with 100% of this, but there's some issues with its, you know, how well it does after it's been owned for a while. I'm waiting for the, you know, 2 years from now S reviews for the first ones to see how they're doing. I mean,
Stock got nailed.
Stock got hammered. There are things on the Tesla that there's certain things I see on any car that bother me. And one of the things, and I've seen this on Tesla has this, and I've seen other luxury cars, high end luxury cars with this. They have these crazy door handles.
Mm-hmm.
You get close to the door handle, it's got a sensor of some sort, and the door handle comes out for you to open the car. And there's a bunch of these kinds of electromechanical devices that are just fancy for no good reason. This adds to the cost of the car. It's kind of neat. But it looks like, you know, you see, I don't know about you, but every once in a while I see certain designs or interiors, or I see something and I look at it and so that's so beautiful all the way that's designed. And I look at it, I don't know, you may do this too. I look at it and go, all I see is a giant dust catcher.
Yeah.
There's no way you can dust this. It's up too high and it's just a ledge and dust is going to collect. I see these little mechanical, things on these cars and I go, this isn't going
to
break.
Yeah, so something has to be fixed one day.
Yeah, it's not going to work forever.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got that with my newest Epson printer that I have. It's got a little crazy thing where the tray comes out with some little motor pushes it out. You can't replace the paper without pushing this thing back in. And then every time it starts printing, little motor brings out. And I'm thinking, this is not going to work for very long.
No, I agree with you. I mean, this is a problem.
And nowadays, these motors usually have plastic gears, too, which is something that cracks and corrodes. It's not metal.
Right.
Anyway, I can go on.
Well, I mean, this is interesting because this, I think, is the first real look at serious complaints. I mean, we had the situation with Tesla some time ago with the cars that were supposedly catching on fire due to the batteries, but then they were proven not to be the cars. It was proven to be the accident that caused the issue, and it wasn't necessarily anything more than that. And all these other cars that become engulfed in flames when they get into an accident because of the, you know, for whatever it is. But this is going to be interesting to watch because there's a few things going on behind the scenes with Tesla. You also have the fact they have this new model. They only have they don't have enough assembly lines and production facilities to meet the demand, which on one hand is good because that creates a backlog. And the fact is that obviously you could do a nice estimate of what your long-term earnings are going to be. But at the same time, now that you have something like this that comes out, so here I am. I got an order in for a Tesla that is going to be ready for me in six months, let's say, right? Well, I'm okay with that, and that's fine. All of a sudden, I see this kind of thing. Maybe I go in and I cancel my order.
Well, you got to pay a penalty if you do that.
I don't know if Elon Musk would do that.
Would charge a penalty?
Yep. I would think he's the kind of guy that says, you know what? If you don't want it, it's fine.
Well, he might. You might be right. But there's a couple of things going on that bother me about the company if I was thinking about long term. First of all, that new model with the crazy gull wings or sparrow wings or whatever they call it, it's not attractive. It's kind of like a Model S that's been scrunched. And here's what happened that I think is, as far as I know, this is what I'm going to say is true. The Model S was designed by Fisker,
mm-hmm.
the other electric car guy.
That went out, of
went out of business.
Right, right.
And if you see the Fisker car, which is a little sports car, unlike the sports car that they came out with from Tesla, which is just a Lotus that's been rejiggered. The Fisker sports car is, when you see one on the road, you remember seeing it. It mm-hmm. is outrageously gorgeous. Mm-hmm. This guy is one of the great designers. He designed the Model S. And then I think he's working for Ford or General Motors now, one of the two. And he was the designer of the outrageous Fisker. He designed the Model S. I do not think he designed the X. And I don't think he's ever going to design anything else for Tesla because Elon badmouthed the Fisker company at one point, saying they made crap. And so Fisker, why would he care to work with him anymore? I don't think but he's one of these superstar designers. I think what's happened, because it's very difficult to find a guy who can make a car that looks that good.
The Fisker
Model
is gorgeous. Fisker's gorgeous.
Is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, every time I see it somewhere, I'm like, I just stop and I'm like, what is that car? You know, just because I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, and you don't see many of them because obviously it's not in production.
I see a lot around here, but.
Do you? They're not in production. When's the last year they produced?
But the Model S?
No, the Fisker.
The Fisker is outrageous when you see one of those. I've only seen two or three of them ever.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
White color. But the Model S is also quite a gorgeous car. I mean, the Jaguars copied a lot of its lines, and some other people have too. But this is a guy, these types of designers are rare.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the Model S's appeal, even though it's never discussed, because everyone talks about performance, and yeah, it's got great performance. But a lot of the appeal is the look of the car. It is a good-looking car. You feel like you've got something there.
Right. No, it's beautiful.
And if you lose that little cachet, you don't have this kind of guy anymore. It spells doom as far as I can tell.
Well, it's the equivalent of the Ford Fusion. Well, the Ford Volt. Excuse me, the Ford Volt. It's an electric car. It's ugly as
shit.
Chevy Volt. It's ugly. Who wants it? It's not, you know, the only reason it turns heads is because people say, oh my God, what is that? You know?
Looks a little like one of those Aztecs, if you remember that car.
Who made that one?
Chevy? I think it was Oldsmobile or Pontiac. Oh,
All right, let's talk about a few other things here. Talk about McDonald's for a moment. Now, the big excitement is all day breakfast. It's earth shattering that you can have an egg sandwich in the afternoon.
You know, McDonald's has done, because we've studied this on the No Agenda show. We look at native advertising and who's doing it and why. McDonald's has been spending a lot of money planting phony news stories, especially with ABC, discussing, oh, the breaking news, McDonald's having, you know, this is not a news story by any means.
No,
breaking
kidding.
News, McDonald's is going to be having breakfast all day. The company announced that yesterday that they're going to have breakfast all day. This is not a, even a press release story, but they're obviously being paid to talk about it. So they're putting a lot of their money where their mouth is in terms of like marketing this idea.
I mean, they make it sound like you know what? New national law, 4-day weekends. You know, that's what it's like. It's like, oh my gosh, that is so unbelievable. We're gonna nobody has to work on Fridays or Mondays. We have Friday through. That's terrific. And I was like, you know, oh, that's exciting. That's a change of that's just a world breaking change of everything in my life. And the way they're making this sound, this all-day breakfast, is like this, wow, you know? So the other day we go into a McDonald's because I'm traveling up to Orlando. And on the way back, I said, let me get up some coffee. There's nothing else on this highway. So I saw McDonald's. I pulled out over to off the expressway, went into the McDonald's. And my wife sees that there's breakfast, and it was in the afternoon. And I said, oh, yeah, McDonald's now has all-day breakfast. She goes, oh, my God, that's crazy. Who's going to eat a breakfast sandwich or something in the afternoon? What is that about? The guy next guy in line comes up. It's like 5 in the afternoon. I'll have 2 sausage biscuits with cheese. You know, he's like, he's ordering this. But anyway, this is supposedly going to be a major winner in terms of new revenue.
Oh, please.
I'm telling you what it's being looked at.
Okay, so I go in there in the afternoon and buy a McSausage, whatever, instead of a cheeseburger.
Right.
Well, I don't see the revenue difference.
Well, the only difference is you may not have gone to McDonald's because you were really, for some reason, for whatever reason, you just needed an Egg McMuffin at 8 p.m. And there's really no other place besides maybe a Denny's or, I don't know, pick another place that has this kind of thing.
Waffle House, don't they serve that kind of thing all the time?
All day long? Exactly. Breakfast all day. Most diners, for that matter, breakfast all day. So you're gonna go in and you're gonna because you got a hankering for a maybe you want a Big Mac, but with that Big Mac you want instead of French fries you want the hash browns. I don't know. I'm just saying. I don't know. You know.
You're gonna eat them with your hand.
It's the number 1.5. You know. So, but also today, McDonald's announcing that they're testing Monster beverage drinks in the restaurants. I found this kind of weird. They confirmed it. They confirmed it. Monster beverage really moved higher. But they're going to put energy drinks in McDonald's?
That's what people don't need.
I mean, you can eat all that crap.
Those are not that healthy to be drinking casually.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So with that in mind, let me just
beginning of the end.
Yeah, let me talk to you about another issue that happened this weekend. With my wife. I'm up in Orlando and we're in this hotel and they have one of those little Starbucks, not a kiosk, but like a little Starbucks store, just a little bitty one, just kind of a shelf, an area for you to walk up to a counter. And it's maybe, I don't know, let's see, 15 feet wide by maybe 10 feet back. Okay. This little kind of cubby with Starbucks. And this poor schlub who's got this job at Starbucks, you know, he works at Starbucks, he's alone all day in the middle of a hotel, getting like no business because the hotel has like free coffee in the other room.
Right. Okay.
She goes downstairs. She decides she's going to get a Starbucks. She goes, gets the Starbucks, comes upstairs and tells me the story. She says, you know what? You won't believe what happened. She says, I went downstairs to Starbucks and I tasted the coffee. I asked for the strongest one they have and it tasted horrible. It was like watery. I said, well, that's odd for Starbucks because it's always very strong. She said to the barista, said, listen, what's the story with this coffee? It's terrible. And she says, listen, the guy says to her, listen, my boss or the manager deliberately tells us to use less beans and grinds in each of the pots that we make because at the end of the day, they count up how many bags and how many grinds we use compared to how many we sell, and it boosts profitability. What do you think of that?
Well, there's somebody's doing the wrong kind of calculation.
Why?
Well, for one thing, if you sell X amount, you should have used X amount of beans.
I agree.
The company, corporate guy should say, wait a minute, you're selling 20 times more. This is exaggerated. You're selling 20 cups of coffee and you're using a half a pound of beans. Usually it takes 3 pounds of beans to sell 20 cups of coffee. You guys are selling the customers water.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would think if I was managing this operation.
Right. Well, the level up from this particular.
Yeah, the level up right. would be the ones that would spot that this is a scam and they're mm-hmm. ruining the brand. This is hurting the brand. I would fire that guy in a minute.
Yeah, no kidding. I was just wondering how often this goes on. People don't know about it. A little bit less coffee is being used in these kind of situations. And, you know, you continue to expand the profitability of each of the various Starbucks.
Interesting.
I don't know. Maybe it's not.
I think it's funny that your wife managed to grill the guy to find out.
Yep. Let's see. Drone regulation. Now federal regulators hoping to discourage mischief and negligence. I always get a lot of tweets on this and feedback and emails on when we discuss drones. People get kind of pissed off about this because they say there's a difference between a drone, you know, kind of one of those drones that are flying overhead by the government, you know, an unmanned
right, and a quadcopter.
And a quadcopter.
Right.
Okay. The problem with the difference is that I'm not sure about this. I'm pretty sure if the Army or the Air Force has a drone, it's probably under some form of regulation.
Well, I don't know about that, but the quadcopter can go, the new ones can go pretty high.
Yep.
And they could get into the way of a plane and go right into the engine.
Right. So I think there has to be some kind of, and only for the reason that people are stupid. You know, people are like, let's go to the airport and kind of, or let's go to the local jail and, you know, get the quad, you know, go over the wall or something, you know, because you can obviously do those things, right? So you get into areas that you shouldn't be, you know, or you put it up in the air and you go into the baseball stadium, something crazy. So there's a proposal to require owners to register their unmanned aircraft. Do you think that's bad?
Well, I don't think it's going to be effective.
Well, obviously,
you still you can get these planes without. I'm sure. I mean, they can't license guns. Why are they going to license these things? It's not going to happen.
Right. No, I agree that it's not going to do anything. The general registration, but I think that there need to be regulations on at least some rules and guidelines on where you can do this and how you can do this. What's allowed?
Well, I think this should be free game. The problem is that right now, if you shoot down one of these things that happens to be hovering out, you're liable for, you have to buy it back for the guy and you committed some sort of an offense. I think if there's a one of these quadcopters in the wild floating around and you can take it down with a net or another copter that has a gun on it and you can take that thing and take it home and steal it, I think that's fair game. I think if they let that happen, these guys wouldn't be so damn careless.
I think if you just throw a rock at it, I mean, your quadcopter got in the way of my rock.
I think that's fine.
Yeah, right?
So, yeah.
Anyway, let's look at Twitter for a second. Steve Ballmer buying a 10% position in Twitter. Not sure what he's going to do with that, but he likes some of the things that Twitter is doing since Jack Dorsey got into his position, which I'm not sure what he's done besides
done anything people. I can tell.
Yeah. So, although the stock now has at least some significant backing. Now, just to contrast the power and effectiveness of Steve Ballmer, one of the originators of one of the most powerful systems that really created the entire boom of computers, internet, and all that, right? Which was the baseline. Compared to Oprah Winfrey, who has a show, and of course everybody loves her, but we're talking about a diet company.
She has the touch. Ballmer's never been seen as an investment guru or a genius.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it was Warren Buffett that made the investment, I'd take it a little more seriously.
Well, we could talk about that,
too. I mean, he way overpaid, for example, for that basketball team.
Well,
by that, like $1 billion.
Yeah, but that was just a, you know, hey, I got the money. What the hell? I want to own a basketball team. Look at me. I don't think that was necessarily for an investment.
No, but it is an investment.
Right.
You don't have to overpay. You could have gotten it cheaper, just negotiated a little bit. Why? Here's the problem. It makes it look like he's just throwing his money away. So when he does this with Twitter, it looks just like a lark.
Right. Here's $5. Let's see what you could do with it.
Yeah.
IBM came out with earnings yesterday, and I got to tell you, if we had a sound effect, it would be one of those. Wah, wah, wah. Terrible. Absolutely awful. Again, another quarter of declining revenues. And we saw that they earned $3.34 per share, which was better than expectations. Revenues fell 13.5% year over year. Outlook was terrible. And as a matter of fact, the CFO came on and he was talking about, he must have used the word weak, poor, weak, you know, all describing the various sectors, their particular of that company. It was awful. So they issued downside guidance for fiscal year 15, lowered their EPS to $14.75 to $15.75, somewhere in that range. But that's a pretty big range from about a dollar higher on both ends. Pretty ugly. And they lowered their some of their other numbers. The cloud numbers were a little bit better. But again, you know, what's interesting about everybody reporting their cloud numbers, how, oh, we're up 45% year over year. It's like, okay, but you only started that a year and a half ago. Or yeah, 2 years ago. It's
ludicrous.
So, you know, so how are you telling me it's up so much? It's, you know, it's great that it's up so much, but compared to what? So all these, they call these company divisions strategic imperatives, cloud analytics, engagement. That did increase, but overall it was really bad. Stock is now at about about $140. And the chart looks absolutely awful. Just to point out that this is a big holding for Warren Buffett and one of the stocks he really likes. I don't know what he likes about this company. I mean, seriously, I really don't. This has been something you and I talked about for a long time.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Real quickly, Yum Brands, terrible quarter, absolutely awful quarter. A lot of it due to China. So you know what they're doing? They're spinning off their China division. Like, hey, you know what? I have a great idea. We got this company.
Yeah, let's take the most profitable part of our industry business and spin it off. That'll put us in great
shape. Yeah, so that when China's not doing well, it's not a reflection on us. And what are they going to do when China picks up in the future? Are they going to push it back in?
I have no idea. It makes no sense.
That's so stupid. So stupid. Let's see what else here. CDOs are coming back. Collateralized debt obligations. These are the instruments that were the things that really were central to the meltdown of the financial markets back in 2008, where they packaged up all this crap that you didn't know was inside of it, all these mortgages and subordinated debt, and then sold it as a block.
Yeah.
Coming back. But of course, this time's going to be different.
Or you could say there's a sucker born every minute.
Yeah.
Either one.
And finally on my list, let's see if this finally, let's see, IBM, Drone, Steve Baum, Western Digital is buying SanDisk. I'm not sure about that. Western Digital stock doesn't seem to like it.
We talked about this already, the SanDisk thing, and we just...
SanDisk was actually, it was...
By the way, this is a good example of insider information and how useless it could be. Say you knew about this before this deal. Oh, Western Digital is going to buy SanDisk, and you bought Western Digital on this insider information.
Yeah. No good.
It went down.
Yeah. Well, usually under normal circumstances and historically, most of the time, the acquiring company will go down.
This is true.
You know, but lately it's been, everything's going to be accretive and we're going to get rid of all this excess overlap of expenses, employees, et cetera. And, you know, starting day one is going to be accretive. I mean, it may be, but oftentimes it's not really the case when it's not a great, unbelievable deal. Finally, a Norwegian hunting party was amazed at their luck when they found and shot dead two large moose. So they were out there and they, I guess, just wandering along a path. They saw these unbelievably large moose and shot them and they got them. Later, by about maybe a couple of minutes, they realized something horrible. They'd shot through a fence and killed two zoo animals.
Right. Two prime specimens.
This has got to be twisted somehow because it seems totally ridiculous that they shot through a fence that they couldn't see the fence.
Well, it could have been like one of those, like, you know, it's not a solid fence. It's one of those wire fences.
And maybe
it was dark out.
Ah. Yeah. bad. Too bad for the
whatever
moose.
Whatever the case, it was a mistake.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's get to the stocks. By the way, you can check out all the stocks over on DH Unplugged. Go over to where it says weekly stock picks, and you can check those out. We require a simple registration, no cost. Please take a look, because this is a live feed of the stocks that we talk about. It's a game that we play looking for some opportunities. Of course, it is not a suggestion or recommendation to buy or sell any security. You have to make sure that you know that it's very risky to buy stocks. Go to a qualified financial advisor for advice. Do your homework. We are not responsible for any losses. Gains, of course, you can happily send us gifts for. And that's on DH Unplugged, of course. Let's see here. So
you right now are in the lead.
At the moment. Well, it hasn't really changed that much from where we were.
No, there's a nice, yeah. Sun Edison is one of my favorites on here.
Yeah, that thing has been all over the place. I mean, the thing is with Sun Edison, this was the problem with Sun Edison is that they acquired a ton of companies. They used a lot of leverage. And the big concern was, did they bite off more than they could chew? Stock came down from, I don't even know what the price of the stock was, in the 60s. And it just took a nosedive. And we bought it once before, and it didn't work out so well. But we kind of stayed with it, which is a great lesson, I think. That if maybe at first you don't succeed, possibly there's an opportunity for you to buy it again in the future.
Yeah.
But going through here, why don't you take the list?
Well, you've got, I just closed it. I didn't close it. Hang on. I just moved to a different page. Well, we got ProShares Lehman Ultra Short 20 plus TBT is dead money. But on the other hand, well, it's dead money, the short on iShares, iBox, high yield corporate bonds, HYG, also dead money, nothing. Tata Motors way up, Sun Edison way up. Helmerich and Payne Inc., an oil driller, which I thought was a huge speculation, but you were in and it's up 18%. Hmm. New Mountain Finance, a company that's got some insider buying, is going to take a while before anything happens with that. It's up 3.5%. And then somehow Tracon Pharmaceuticals is down, which is I was shorting, so it went up. And then you have Velocity 3X Inverse Crude ETN linked to the S&P, which is DWTI, which is you bought, and it's actually up. And I believe that. What is that? That's a shorting,
three times short oil.
That's a three times short oil, and right. Okay.
It was up 10% more. It came back down, so we stopped that out, up 13%.
Oh, you got kicked out?
Mm-hmm.
And then Pioneer Natural Resources, which is dead money. I shorted it because one of the directors is dumping it in an odd circumstance. So normally you don't care what insiders do when it comes to selling, because they're maybe just taking money off the table. But if it's an odd circumstance, it's maybe more to it. So that's what I was thinking, but it hasn't done anything.
So, you know,
so this week, I have a couple of things.
Let me just mention something. I thought it was kind of interesting how things are playing right now in terms of markets. There seems to be a continual bid under oil. Right now we see that the rig count, which is released every Friday afternoon, and we see how many rigs are actually currently active and then how many are idle. A lot of companies are idling their rigs because it's just like mining or whatever it is. They shut down the mine. They want to raise the price back up. They want to constrain supply. So we see that we're at the lowest we've been in years in terms of total rig count. So oil is on the buy side, it seems. Although we made money in the short. Still with the fact that there's still a 40% overage in overall inventory size right now. But I find it interesting right now, this kind of bid that we have in the markets, you know, with the idea that behind all of this is stimulus. And I just wonder when that transition happens to catch reality that the economies around the world are continuing to slow, stimulus isn't helping, and earnings are slowing. I wonder if that's going to set in motion something one of these days soon.
Maybe, or is this the new normal?
Yeah, it could be. So I have one pick.
Oh, you got one. What is it?
Oh, you didn't see it on there.
It's not on there.
It's reluctant. Reluctantly, I do this very, wait, very.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
It's either Green Mountain or Or what's your other favorite? That shoe, Crocs.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. Yeah, this could be disastrous. But buying Fitbit.
Oh, this is the Oprah thing.
The Oprah story. Yep.
Yeah.
Buying Fitbit. This is all Oprah with the idea that by the end of the year, there's some plan going to be put together that Fitbit and the Oprah sites and the Oprah world is going to be. You'll know this when this happens. When Oprah, during one of her shows, gives away a Fitbit to everybody in the audience, that will be the clue.
That right? would be the clue, indeed.
That will be the clue.
I'd like the short Weight Watchers.
Oh, okay. We could do that.
But I don't know that it's not finished, so wait.
You could do one of the things like we did with Twitter that time, which was pick a higher price, and then if it hits that.
No, I'm not that good.
Okay.
So I'll just let it slide. But I just thought I'd suggest it. I do want to try a lark on some insider buying.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of things going on in the hospitality and hotel business. There's a lot of buying and selling going on, which is not unusual. But the one that looks kind of interesting is Ryman Hospitality Properties. It's a REIT, a real estate investment trust in the hotel and motel business, as opposed to the companies that seem to be having difficulty, which are the people specifically involved in vacationing. I've noticed this. But RHP, I want to go long.
RHP, I got it here. Let me just put it into the system, get it in there. Again, we have this spreadsheet where we track it all, and it keeps it live and updating throughout the day. RHP, got it. And this is because of insiders.
Yes, insiders.
Insiders buying. Okay, got it. Ryman. What else you got?
You know, I'm looking at some of these beverage companies. I saw that I can't remember their parent name, but the Budweiser. Is it InBev or is it InBev that owns
Budweiser.
Yeah, it's Budweiser. And then there's the other company that owns Miller. They're going to merge.
It's InBev, yeah.
Should be illegal.
Oh, no, and Anheuser-Busch InBev. That's another one.
Yeah, okay, that's InBev. Yeah. That's the Belgian company, I believe. Constellation Brands is a company I'm looking at.
That's a great company.
Yeah, it is a great company. I don't know what to do about it. But I'm just looking at it.
Yeah, this has been doing great.
I know that one of the directors, I think it's a director, let me see. Just sold $7.5 million worth of it. That just doesn't mean anything. Whoops.
Well, look at that, Sam Adams. That's on the move. All these beer companies, all these, you know, there's a lot of consolidation going on in this area, of course, but all of the make me happy type of companies are doing well. You know, whether it's some restaurants, you know what? We didn't even talk about this whole no tipping policy thing, did we? We got to talk about
that.
No,
we didn't. We could save that, but yeah. I mean, we can talk about it.
No,
let's talk.
Let's talk about it next time. That whole thing baffles me.
Yeah. We'll talk about it in more detail.
SAB
well,
Miller,
guy, this guy is? Paul Hederick, who's the EVP development guy and beer head of beer, with Constellation. He has been dumping stocks, the Constellation stock. I think he just keeps selling and selling. He's going crazy. Anyway, but I don't know what that means. So I'm just watching. All right, I'm good.
That's it. So we have one.
One for me and one from you.
Yeah, one for me, one from you. You have the long on RHP.
Right.
Long on RHP. Okay, we'll put that in there. All right, until next time, I bid you adieu. Make sure to follow John C. Dvorak on Twitter at The Real Dvorak. Who is this other Dvorak? I saw somebody else that has like a name like yours.
I don't know.
That you responded to?
Oh, there's a lot of Dvoraks that are on Twitter.
They just like to replicate who you are.
No, this is just a lot. There's a number of women writers. There's a lot of writers named Dvorak, and I find that to be peculiar.
Hmm. That's weird.
There's four John Dvoraks that are writers.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that where is that why you say John C. Dvorak?
Well, that's one reason. That's a good reason.
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
One writes about metallurgy. One writes about the legalization of marijuana. And one writes, what was the other one? Oh, the other one's a reporter for in the Kansas City Star, or was.
Hmm. That's weird. Definitely.
Yeah,
weird.
That's what I think.
All right, I will get this to on the special sheet that we have. Make sure to follow me on Twitter as well, Andrew Horowitz. Listen to all of the great shows, No Agenda, The Disciplined Investor, as well on iTunes or your favorite podcasting device. All right, I will see you next week, sir.
All right.
All right, bye-bye.
Adios.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.